This is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.
And I'm Anthony Brooks. When it comes to Boston's latest set of plans to overhaul its public school assignment system, we could talk about the numbers. 56,000 students. Plans that would chop up the school district into anywhere from 1 to 23 zones. The $80 million per year it costs to bus students back and forth across the city, et cetera, et cetera.
We could talk about those things, but for a moment, let's not. Let's put those numbers aside and speak frankly about what this latest round of school assignment wrangling is really about. It's about race. It's about income inequality. It's about the legacy of Boston's busing history and about a persistent achievement gap. And it's about how all of these things can stand in the way of a child's right to a quality public school education.
So what, if anything, do these busing plans do to take on these fundamental challenges? Who's really being served and who's not? Is the solution really just redrawing lines on a map? And what differences will that make if the actual schools on the ground aren't any different, regardless of where those lines fall? Give us a call at 800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK.
We're joined now in the studio by Barbara Fields. She's a former teacher and senior officer in the Office of Equity at Boston Public Schools. She is currently executive director of the Black Educators Alliance of Massachusetts. Barbara Fields, welcome to Radio Boston.
Thank you very much. Thank you for having me.
It's a pleasure to have you. We're also joined in the studio by Boston City Councilor at large John Connolly. He's proposed an alternate zoning plan, one that would, among other things, create new magnet schools across the city. Councilor Connolly, welcome back to you as well.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
And also with us on the line is Carol Johnson, the superintendent of Boston Public Schools. Superintendent Johnson, welcome back to Radio Boston to you.
Good afternoon. So,
Barbara Fields, let me start with you. Currently, Boston has three zones, which means that it is possible for students to be bused quite far across the city from where they live. When you look at the plans that have been proposed, do you see any of them as possibly improving the district as a whole for families in a meaningful way?
No, I do not. Mainly because I think the real issue is quality, and all parents are looking for quality for their children. So I see the plans as more moving the chairs on the deck, and we will still have parents who are dissatisfied with the plan because they will not have access to quality schools. So I believe very strongly that until we address the issue of quality is something that we've been seeking for a long, long time, and until we start focusing on that, then these different plans that do not really address the issue of quality will not get us to where we need to be.
But, for example, Mayor Menino has said that he believes part of what makes for quality schools is neighborhood involvement in those schools, and he thinks that if, you know, students who live next door to each other are going to the same schools, the same neighborhood schools, that in the long run that will have a positive impact on quality.
Well, I find that to be quite interesting, given that before we ever got into this issue of busing, children were going to their neighborhood schools, and we did not have quality, and that's why Black parents ended up in court, because it was seeking quality, and that's still the issue for us today, is to get quality schools. And while I agree that there are parents who live close to their schools, they have quality schools, they have the political, the socioeconomic advantages that they're able to impact their schools in certain ways. And there are parents, other parents who, you know, are able to do that. But if we're talking about systemically having quality, then I feel that that's something that the district needs to do in partnership with parents and neighborhood schools. In and of itself will not get the quality.
We'll come back to this issue about parental involvement in just a moment. But Councillor Connolly, let me come to you next. I mean, I gather that you're not entirely pleased with the plans you see either, which is why you've suggested your own. What is it that you want to do differently than the ones that Boston Public Schools have proposed?
Well, I agree with Barbara on her basic premise, which is that it is all about quality. It's the one thing everyone in the city can agree on. Every child ought to go into a high-quality school. We thought the original five plans that BPS put out were lacking real hard, tangible commitments around a strategy to upgrade quality at every school. So I joined with five other elected officials, a coalition that really incorporates every neighborhood and includes elected officials of color as well in our coalition. And we put a plan on the table that said, let's get out of this either-or framework we're in. Let's put quality first. Let's guarantee a close-to-home option to parents, and let's create a network of citywide magnet schools to create choice as well. It's possible to balance choice and close-to-home as long as we have the emphasis on quality first.
Now, you have a child in the Boston Public Schools.
I do,
and
yes.
You live in West Roxbury.
I live in West Roxbury.
What
yep.
did you experience when you tried to get your child into one of the schools in yep. the lottery system?
So I listed about 14 schools. My wife and I went out and visited almost every school in our zone. We listed 14 schools. Our number one choice was a school close to where we lived, and most of our choices were close to where we lived. We were unassigned. We didn't get a seat like many families that go through this process. We went into the second round of the lottery. We were ready to put a deposit down for a Catholic school seat, and we're very sad about that because we wanted to be in BPS. We said, let's go see the Trotter School in Roxbury. It was the only school with open seats left, and 4 years ago it was one of the worst schools in the city. Because of the achievement gap law that gave them turnaround power, a principal who could hire her own faculty, extra money, longer mm-hmm. school day, all of these pieces, that school is in process of having an amazing renaissance. And so we ultimately chose that school, and our daughter got in the lottery, and we go there now, and it's wonderful, and it's home for us, and we don't want to leave there. But the one piece I would say is I'm a city councilor. My wife is a middle-class professional around as well. We could arrange our schedule to go visit all these schools. I had access to the information that this was the only school with open seats. I understood the nature of the turnaround law given my work. How many parents out there can really go through all of these steps to find a good school? Most choose something close to home that includes parents in our underserved neighborhoods, and then they either get in or they don't, and we're stuck in a win-loss lottery right. system that doesn't work.
So there's a lot to dig into there, and we will do that. But Superintendent Johnson, let me bring you in here. You've heard many things just now, both from Barbara Field and Councillor John Connolly, but both of them point to the number one issue that persists in the minds of parents, and that is that there just aren't enough quality schools to go around in the Boston Public School District.
Well, let me first say that I think we certainly agree that quality is an important, most important factor. And when we talk to parents, and we've been talking to parents and the community for close to over a year, particularly about what would change to make things better, they said that quality, academic performance, those were key issues. Now, they did say that they defined quality more than just about test scores. And so we've really worked hard to target underperformance in our schools, starting certainly with our 11, now 12 turnaround schools. We've seen tremendous progress. And Councilor Connolly just pointed out the Trotter School is one example of where our investments have paid off, where when you put the right people in place, you make sure that you target the right resources for the students who need help the most, you provide additional time and support for those students, and you work with partners, that you can turn around schools. And we see real evidence that our investments and our strategic work around turning underperforming schools around definitely has improved quality. It's improved quality particularly in Roxbury, at Orchard mm-hmm. Gardens, at the Trotter, particularly at the JFK and John F. Kennedy in Jamaica Plain, at the Blackstone.
Superintendent Johnson, I'm sorry, but I wonder if I might just jump in here and cut to the chase. Do you think that the idea of neighborhood schools is a good one?
Well, here's what I think. I think that we need to make sure that when we talk about trying to improve the overall quality of education in Boston and around the nation, I must say this is really the most important and impactful work in America today. We can't continue to let urban communities of this nation really underperform at significant levels with huge achievement gaps. So you have to target the underperformance, you have to target improving teaching, and you have to make sure that there is access and exposure. And this is where sometimes providing that exposure and that opportunity, not just in school but outside of school, during out of school time and having the right partners assembled to provide that time is really important. I think the example that we use in Bowdoin, Geneva is 1,900 school-age kids going to 102 different schools. How do you map out a support strategy that wraps around services beyond just what happens in school, but so it makes sure that those students have the great opportunities that they need to have? I think that when we talk to parents, and we've talked to lots and lots of parents over the last really 5 years since I've been here, I've heard over and over again that they do care about quality, that if all things being considered, if they could go to a high-quality school across the street from where they live, they would love that. But they want to make sure that we do ensure quality. And I think that one of the things that we've been doing very strategically is closing schools that underperform, mm-hmm. making sure we make the changes. And I think what's different now than was true years ago is that we are seeing a number of schools in some of our prior to now underperforming schools really make progress with the right kinds of investments, with having the flexibilities that we built now into our teachers' contract around evaluation.
Superintendent Johnson, right. I'm sorry, I'm just going to jump in here because I do want to bring Barbara Fields and John Connolly back into this conversation. But I guess it's just not clear to me, and I just might be echoing what Barbara Fields said a little earlier, how the any reassignment of zones, essentially changing lines on a map, is going to do exactly all the things
that
you were talking.
That is not what I have proposed at all.
No, but what I'm wondering is all the things you've just talked about regarding increasing quality, I don't know how that happens in part through the zone system and the new plans that have been proposed.
Okay, so I just want to be very clear. The strategy that we are proposing, and we have been proposing, is not a one strategy. It is a combination of targeting underperformance wherever it occurs with schools, students, or staff, improving the quality of teaching, and increasing access. Those are the strategies that we're using and working with parents as partners. We've never said that this alone, this strategy alone. Let me emphasize also, because I really want to respond to your question. We are trying to educate young people for the 21st century. Boston is an international community. We have students coming from 140 different countries. They're speaking 70 different languages. Our students have to be able to get along with people from different races, different backgrounds, different incomes. So I think that we're not trying to isolate students, but we are trying to effectively educate them. And we want to make sure that we listen to families, and one of the things that families have said over and over again, they want predictability, they want stability, they want to feel the sense of community, but they also want high quality.
So let me bring Barbara Fields back in here. You've been hearing the
combination of those strategies.
Thank you. I'm sorry to interrupt, Superintendent Johnson. I'm a little pressed for time here, and I want to be able to dig into the issues in a meaningful way. So Barbara Fields, you've heard a lot both from Councillor Connolly and Superintendent Johnson. And it is true that the school district has done quite a bit to work with parents, and Superintendent Johnson was talking quite a bit about those schools that have undergone the procedures for turnaround, et cetera. But is there anything you heard in either of our two guests' statements that give you confidence that the underlying question of the persistent achievement gap in Boston, or the fact that there are parents who are willing to bus their kids out of their neighborhood because they just aren't confident about their neighborhood schools, that any of these things can be tangibly changed going forward in the next couple of years?
I commend the superintendent on some of the efforts that have been taken to improve schools, and some schools are improving. However, our improving is not the same thing as being quality schools right now. There are schools that have improved, but they're not now considered the high-performing schools, especially the schools that are in the Black community. And we talk often about listening to parents and the communities. Well, going all the way back to when we changed the student assignment plan with controlled choice, there was a promise of quality. And the result of that plan was to be, and this is going back to 89, was going to be that we would address the issue of quality, because it was heard throughout the communities as we engaged in a similar process that we're engaged in now. We'll move fast forward, and we've had in 1999, we said that we would, again, address the issue of quality. It never happened. We fast forward to 2004. When we also looked at the student assignment plan again, and at that time, the a recommendation from the Student Assignment Task Force was to put together a quality work team, which was put together and included some proponents of Walk to Schools. They developed a quality plan that was presented with recommendations to the school department, never ever implemented.
Let me ask you, do we face a chicken and egg problem here? Because it's totally understandable to me that today parents want quality schools in their neighborhood. But also sometimes I wonder whether or not those same concerned parents are inadvertently using, you know, the idea that if Boston changes its zones and changes its busing policy, that that's going to increase discrimination, it's going to increase the gap between students, that they hold that over the school district's head and say, you got to give us quality first before we'll let go of choice. But maybe, you know, you got to let go of choice first and quality may ensue after that.
Why should parents let go of quality first when that's what parents have been asking for throughout? And the district has given hollow promises around quality. So at which point does your distrust become such that you say, you promised it to me over and over and over again? You stopped me when I was in 204. I could go into 205. I could go into 209. I can go into the school closings.
I hear what you're saying, but let's
can I just say one little point? And we talk about Walk to Schools, and the superintendent mentioned the Bowdoin district. The fact of the matter is we have closed schools throughout the black community. So for a lot of neighborhoods, there will not be neighborhood schools because there aren't any. And we've closed schools consistently in the black community. So some students do not have Walk to Schools.
Councilor Connolly.
So I think that first I just want to say Barbara Fields is a civil rights champion in this city, and she helped the fight to desegregate our schools nearly 40 years ago. And so I take very seriously her concerns around quality and failure to follow through on that. And I just want to acknowledge that off the bat, as you said in your preface, anytime we're really talking about this issue, we're really talking about race and desegregation. But we also need to examine the status quo. And the status quo is that, you know, we like to say we have choice. It's really an illusion and a myth. We don't have choice currently.
Meaning what?
Meaning that when we look at it, in many cases, we are busing poor children of color across neighborhoods to go to underperforming schools with other poor children of color. Many of them are assigned in the second round of the lottery, didn't get one of their top choices. When you look at the so-called high-demand schools, and I'll use the K-2, the kindergarten at the Joyce Kilmer in West Roxbury, one of the highest-demand schools there is, 96% of the seats there are taken by kids in the neighborhood or in the Roslindale, but virtually dominated all by middle class kids via the walk zone rules.
So what you're saying is that you don't believe in the argument that changing the system is going to increase segregation or resegregate the schools.
You've got a system that's 87% children of color, 80% of whom live in poverty. What you have is middle class divestment from people of all walks of life in this system.
So why not change the system to help the students who are currently in the district rather than, you know, a small number
but
of
here's
middle
the,
class families who are automatically more able to be advocates and champions for their children?
One, most studies will tell us that middle class investment in school systems benefits all children and is vital to the success of the system. But the bigger thing here is, while I will totally accept that quality and proximity aren't directly linked, proximity gives you a better launch pad to aim for quality. It's easier to align parental involvement, after-school programming, community resource links with libraries, health centers, and community centers, and it helps to strengthen a community. And we also ignore, by the way, the fact that many parents choose close to home in every neighborhood. And I say, look at East Boston, where the majority of the kids who go into school there, and those are all schools where you're over 90% kids who live in the neighborhood, the majority of them are English language learners living in poverty. They choose to go to schools close to home, and only one of the 9 schools in East Boston is rated in the so-called low category. All the others are either middle or high performing, and there's a community that's living in poverty and English language learners, but actually getting a great job done because they have the strength of their community behind their community schools.
Okay, so...
Kate, I could just go back to a point that I think that Barbara raised, which I think is an important one to resurface, and I certainly... echo the words of John Connolly in terms of describing Barbara's work in the vineyard of justice here. But here's what I think she pointed out. Before, when there was court-ordered desegregation, there was this inequality that existed pervasively, both in terms of resource distribution, quality teachers, and opportunities to learn in more rigorous educational environments. That had to change, and even though I think the Court of Public Opinion is pretty mixed on whether court-ordered desegregation worked, the longitudinal data out of UC Berkeley and other places says that there are long-term benefits and outcomes, improved life chances in education, employment, and positive health outcomes for individuals who were part of that. So I think that the research, the longitudinal research on whether desegregated environments made a difference is there, and it's there in part because resource shifts occurred. That is, schools that have been underinvested in for years were now being invested in.
Mm-hmm.
I would never suggest that we could get to quality either at Orchard Gardens or at the Trotter or at the Burke without the significant resources that we've had to shift in making sure that the most needy students get the resources they want. And so I think that some of the fear that you hear in the community has to do with, are we going to fix the schools in our urban communities, particularly in Black and Latino communities? Are we going to abandon them? And I think that what is really important in this discussion is to not just think that it's the bus ride that's important, but the quality of teaching, the resources to provide the right kinds of investments to extend learning opportunities for kids. It's giving students a good and early start, as we've done with expanding early childhood under the mayor's leadership. I think it is true that we did have unequal outcomes for kids, and that had to change.
Superintendent Johnson, forgive me, because I know it sounds like I'm stepping all over people today, but I do want to give parents who are listening a chance to chime in with their view on this, and we've got a lot of them on the line. Mary's calling from Jamaica Plain. You're on the air, Mary.
Oh, hi. Hi, everyone. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, go ahead, Mary.
Okay, great. I just wanted to say I feel that it's ironic that Carol Johnson stated that parents want predictability, because in the last few years, BPS has closed schools. This is the second time in a few years that they've brought out a new rezoning process. And I guess what I want to say is that I really want BPS to truly value stability and predictability. Like, when you're assigned to a school, even if it wasn't your first choice, you put a lot of time and energy making a community out of that school, and you invest in it. And then, you know, you turn around and your school is closed or your school is moved, or, you know, now like this, you don't even know if your child or their siblings are going to be able to continue to go to that school.
Mary, thank you so much for your call. I'm sorry to interrupt, but I think Karen, who's calling from Roslindale, is going to dovetail nicely with your point. Karen, you're on the air.
Hi, thank you. And I think John and Carol and Barbara will recognize this statement, but basically we really are asking, parents everywhere are asking, that you slow this process down, that you not push it through by the December deadline, because no matter how you rezone, we're always going to have segregation of some sort, whether it's racial, special needs, it doesn't matter. And I think that it's important that we take the time and invest the quality into this process that we want to get out of it in our schools.
Karen, thank you so much for your call. Let's get one more call in here from Rachel, who's calling from Westwood. You're on the air, Rachel.
Hi. You know, as I walk around the city, I see huge diversity everywhere I go. And I find it difficult to believe that if you had neighborhood schools, you wouldn't, as a matter of fact, have diversity. It seems completely unnecessary, as you said, to ship these kids all over the place when the diversity exists, and what you need for quality is community and to partner with parents to send their kids to school ready to learn.
Rachel, thank you so much for your call.
You have a study yesterday, Meghna, from Metropolitan Area Planning Council.
Actually, John Conley, if you don't mind, what I'd like to do is get Barbara Fields in here first, and then I'm going to happily turn to you. Just got a couple minutes. I want to be able to give everyone a voice here. Barbara Fields, you heard both parents say, slow down, and Rachel say, basically what we heard Councillor Connolly say is that we've already got a diverse city. But I wonder, in the last couple minutes we have, briefly from you, we have this December deadline. Practically speaking, what do you want the school district to do regarding the next step that it's planning to take with the zoning plans?
I think what one of the callers said, to slow this process down so we can really look at the issue of quality and look at it in a meaningful way. And the other point I would make, if all of these parents are asking for neighborhood schools, then why is there such a push for grandfathering? a lot of parents want to stay where they are. They want grandfather, and they don't want it for 1 or 2 years. They also are asking about it for their siblings, which is part of that preference as well.
On that note, let me turn right to Counselor Connolly.
Well, as I mentioned before, when you look at the high-demand schools, they're pretty much dominated by people who live close by, and that's who's really spearheading the call for grandfathering. So you've got to look at that reality of the status quo again. I mean, if we stay in this status quo, we're just going to perpetuate the equity divide and the quality divide that we talk about all the time. And so while I'm not pleased overall with the 5 plans that BPS put on the table, we have to recognize that close to home creates the launch pad to really drive home equity upgrades. And our quality choice plan, we specified real quality commitments, and we tried to balance it with magnet options that would leave open choices. But we have to recognize that the majority of kids in this city get on buses every day, and many of them are poor children of color that are going to underperforming schools. This assignment system doesn't work for those children.
Let me turn to Superintendent Carol Johnson. We've got just about a minute to go, Superintendent. Not a ton of time, and I'm sorry about that. But what about, you heard this call of just slowing the process down a little so that everyone can absorb it and think about it a little more. Is that even a possibility?
Well, I think that we've had an extensive conversation over a whole year, listening to lots of families and trying to summarize what they've said. I think that in terms of urgency, our families want to have the predictability and to know that their child is going to go to a good school right now if they're in third grade or 10th grade. And they don't want us to continue to delay our efforts to improve quality. I think that we have almost 10,000 more students going to higher quality schools because of some of the changes we've made. And we focused on targeting underperformers, improving teaching, and increasing access. I think that it's not just about the bus ride. It's about what happens when students walk into class, and how do we distribute the resources, and how do we make sure that we have the best teachers working in with our lowest performing kids. And I think it's the question about quality is a real important question, but it is a solvable question and one that we can work aggressively with the community and with our other partners to address.
Carol Johnson is the superintendent of Boston Public Schools. Superintendent Johnson, always great to have you on the show. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
And Barbara Fields, Executive Director of the Black Educators Alliance of Massachusetts. True pleasure to have you on the program. Thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you.
And John Connolly, at-large Boston City Councilor, thank you for coming back as well.
Thanks.
Listeners, let me know what you think at radioboston.org, or you can send me a tweet. I'm at Meghna, WBUR. That's MEGHNAWBUR. And stay with us, because coming up, we have one woman's account of domestic violence. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty with Anthony Brooks. This is Radio Boston.